Hello and welcome to Press TV's special look at the case of Shahrzad Mirghali Khan, mother of two, who spent 5 years of her life in a U.S. prison on false charges. Why is her case important? Because not only does it reflect the unjust judicial system that exists in the U.S., where human rights are not only violated outside of the prison, but also inside. Her case also sheds light on the aggressive U.S. conduct in other countries that the U.S. is either directly or covertly involved, namely in their wars.
Shahrzad is a legendary queen and the narrator of the famous collection of stories called 1001 Nights. For 1001 Nights, she tells stories for her time's king who had killed 1,000 women by the time he was introduced to Shahrzad. Her storytelling was aimed at saving her life and the lives of other women, something that Shahrzad eventually managed to achieve. Now, centuries on, another Iranian woman, whose name is incidentally Shahrzad, is telling a story, her own true story. It is about her life in U.S. prisons and how she was mistreated. Shahrzad Mirghali Khan was imprisoned in the U.S. for 5 years since 2007. She's written a book titled Shahrzad, A True Story, that was recently published in the U.S. Her tale stretches from Austria to Dubai and ends up in a U.S. prison. Shahrzad speaks about her ordeal while she was in detention over, quote, false charges of trying to smuggle U.S.-made military hardware into Iran. She fought hard to clear herself of the accusations. She finally regained her freedom after arriving back in Iran in August 2012. While Shahrzad Mirghali Khan was in jail, she had audio interviews with Press TV. She said she was tortured mentally and physically while in custody. Shahrzad said the U.S. authorities were trying to use her as a tool to get her ex-husband, whom they had accused of working for the Iranian government.
Inviting me to America for a governmental business, then handcuffing me from the airport, taking me to the prison and telling me, oh, you've been indicted, either you are going to bring up your ex-husband or we are going to keep you in prison for 65 years. It was the first thing that they have started with me. So they put me under so much pressure and tortured me.
Press TV also conducted several interviews with Shahrzad's daughters and mother. Her daughters explained how they tried to send a letter to U.S. President via an American national, Sarah Short, who was going to the U.S. following her release from detention in Iran on charges of illegal entry.
We gave a letter to Sarah Short to give it to President Obama, and we asked for him to release our mother because we know she's innocent. And we also said that we hope that he can do something in the way she's being treated.
U.S. President never responded to that letter, nor did Short comment on it after returning to America. Shahrzad said she would rather die than being in the U.S. prisons, where she says there are many innocent women being used as baits to trap their husbands. Shahrzad is not the only victim of what she and many others call the flawed justice system in the U.S. There are many people who are under torture while in detention on baseless accusations. Washington also stands accused of grave human rights violations and using torture in prisons outside its own borders, like Guantanamo Bay, and also in countries it has occupied after its recent wars. The wars that were waged under the name of democracy and human rights. A huge number of women and children have lost their lives as a result of aggressive U.S. foreign policy in countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syria, and Yemen, as well as the occupied Palestinian lands, an aggressive policy that seeks to serve the economic and political interests of the U.S.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this special look at the case of Shahrzad Mirghali Khan. She's also an author, which we're going to talk about momentarily. But Shahrzad Mirghali Khan joins us here in the studios, along with her daughters, Malika and also Melina. I'd like to welcome you all.
Thank you.
I had the pleasure, obviously, of talking to you on a couple of occasions and to you when Shahrzad's mother was in the studios. But for me, it's a great pleasure. So let's start by asking you, Shahrzad, what has transpired since you got back? And if you can give us a small preface as to why you were imprisoned for the years that you were in the United States.
Well, as I stated in the past, that it was a trick by U.S. government to arrest and take my ex-husband for the case that they made up against Iranian government over exporting night vision goggles from United States to Iran. The story started as I have acted as a translator in a meeting, in a setup meeting by a cooperation of U.S. and Austrian government in Austria. We've been imprisoned for 28 days in Austria, and U.S. government failed to produce any documents to prove that there was a case or anything against my ex-husband. And they all, the Austrian authority, they knew that I was just a translator, acting as a translator in that meeting. Then after 28 days, we were freed. We came back to UAE. I went back to Austria. I stood the trial. My charge was attempt to conspire to export night vision goggles from United States to Iran, which the judge has fined me because I didn't leave the meeting, and for 2,000 euro with no criminal history. My case was closed forever, everywhere in the world, and I got back to UAE. After that, from UAE, a lot of political things happened, and we got deported to Iran. Then upon my return to Iran after a few months, I got divorced from my ex, and then I moved to Cyprus. Then over some phone calls, something happened that I decided to contact US government to apply for the certificate of clearance, as UAE government has asked me to provide them to give me back my residence visa and whatever I have lost in UAE. After I contacted the U.S. government, I went to renew my visa in Cyprus, and they told me my name is in a stop list, which was another attempt of U.S. government just to set up something to get hold on me and using me to get hold on my ex-husband. Then the U.S. government failed to extradite me from Cyprus because it was a double jeopardy issue. The case that U.S. government has brought forth was again exporting night vision goggles from United States to Iran. After the failure of U.S. government, I had few options: just to apply for political asylum in Cyprus, or come back to Iran, which I didn't want to continue the life with my ex-husband. It was not an option. And or I would go to United States and clear my name and come back. Then U.S. government from the U.S. embassy in Cyprus, they contacted me and they invited me for a governmental business to United States in order to clear my name from Washington stop list as well. I went willingly by myself, and upon my arrival, they just put me in handcuff. They took me to prison, and they told me on several occasions that your only way out is just to bring your ex-husband out of Iran border, that we can get him to U.S. courts and we do the persecution mm-hmm. with him, then we will set you free.
Okay, so what I'm gathering here is obviously a push by the U.S. government to get to your ex-husband. Let's talk about a little bit the conditions that you were in inside of the prison. And before that, quickly if you can, it seems like there's an injustice done in terms of the procedures and the form and manner that you were taken upon your arrival from the States, if what I'm understanding is correct,
yep.
being, I'm sorry to say, handcuffed perhaps, taken to a jail. Did that go through judicial process, or just on the get-go, that's the way they exercised themselves on you without even perhaps you consulting a lawyer? If you can tell us also about that, then we'll go into the prison system and how you were treated there.
At the beginning, at the airport, they welcomed me to United States. Then they took the fingerprint. Then they took me to a room and they told me just to take off your jewelry and you're under arrest. They had a warrant of arrest.
Even though you were invited to come to the state.
Yeah, yes. And I was just surprised and I was kind of shocked that it's not the way that you treat people. And they said, okay, we have this warrant of arrest from the court. We are going to take you to the Federal Detention Center of Miami, and then you would go to court. So they just grabbed me from the airport, put me in handcuffs, put me in the car, took me to Federal Detention Center of Miami. And the next morning they came, they took me to the court, and they said there is an outstanding indictment for you. And they started to ask me I can appoint an attorney, which I didn't have the opportunity. I didn't have anybody in the United States. it took almost 2 weeks. It was around the New Year and holiday in 2008. That it took 2 weeks that I hired an attorney. Then I got to contact my family. For the first 10 days, I didn't have any access to the telephone. And after I got the attorney, at the beginning from the day one, all the attorneys that either they were public defendant or the private one that we hired, they told me, look, you're an Iranian. It's a political case. There is no way out. And this is your best interest to cooperate with U.S. government. And just get your husband, get them what they want, and they just set you free. And so this is how it happened. But from the day one, for instance, when I went, when I walked into Federal Detention Center of Miami on 20th December 2007, for 18 months continuously, I haven't seen sun. Because the place that they confined us, there was no sunshine. And whenever they wanted to transport us from the detention center to the court, we were handcuffed, put in chain, and going underground, put in the car, then come out from the car in the parking slot at the courtroom.
Why were you handcuffed and in chains? Is that standard operating procedures in the prison? Were you singled out amongst a group of people, if you can be a little bit more specific?
No, they do it to everybody. They do it to everybody. I mean, something very humiliating is the, I call it the strip search, that they just make you full naked instead of just putting you going through x-ray or something like that. It's really humiliating. And then after that, they give you another set of clothes. Then they just put the handcuff, handcuff with chain around your waist and shackle your feet. And for me, always, they always put it so tight that I had bleeding on my hands and my feet. And they do it, it's just like the, you know, you see the black history, while the black slaves, they were just putting them in chain and taking them. If you just ask the U.S. government, just they play some of the videos of their own security camera, then the whole world would see what is going on behind the doors of these detention centers and prisons in the United States.
Tell us a little bit more about that. I remember speaking to your mother in one of the interviews, and she talked about the shoe and how that was a horrible experience that you had to go through. What was that all about?
It was really horrible because the special housing unit, usually the inmates who have violated a lot of things or who they attempt to kill somebody inside the prison, because we have a lot of fights inside the prison. The ladies, I mean, what you see inside the movies about ladies' prison has nothing to compare with the reality. The reality is 100 times worse in U.S. federal prisons, the female section that I experienced.
100 times worse.
100 times worse. I mean, there have been a lot of times that the girls, for instance, fight each other over washing machine, and then they just get the head of somebody and just banging on the floor till blood is all over. And it's horrible. I mean, a lot of times, even though I was an inmate, I usually quoted the staff member. This is what put my safety within the inmate society in danger. Because usually they call you the spy for the officers, and snitch. They call you snitch.
That's right.
Yeah, and they just beat you to die. For instance, one time I was in the TV room, and one of the ladies in Federal Detention Center of Danbury, FCI Danbury, she put the olive oil in the microwave. We were all standing in the room waiting for the microwave in the queue. She just opened the door, took the ball out, threw it on the face of the other inmate. So it was all burning in front of you. Then the staff member would code, you just go to your cubicle area and they just get them. And regarding the shoe, it was after the release of Sara Short, when Melika Melina in Tehran went to Evin prison the day that she was being freed, and they gave her the letter. After she arrived to United States, 3 days later on a Saturday afternoon, they came and they told me, just put your clothes on. They put me in the shoe. Then they took all my legal documents, which you have the position of them, and supposedly they are not supposed to touch your legal documents. They can just go through it. and they put me in the shoe. The shoe condition was when they put me there, first they do this trip.
Well, let me interrupt you real quickly before you start getting into the shoe, since you mentioned your daughters, I'd like to give them a chance to also talk. And the fact that you wrote that letter, I remember you saying that, both of you, that you had written a letter and given it to this Sarah Short, and I believe with the two companions, Melina, that they had in prison. How much of a hit was that for you not to get a response? And I ask that, and if you can put that into the context of how, when you have three Americans inside Iran, how it's a big deal to the world, the way the U.S. portrays that, but yet you have a case like your mother inside a U.S. prison where, you know, they try to put a damper on that story. How did that make you feel in that respect, and also the fact that you didn't get a response, obviously, from
the U.S. government? I think that they're very selfish, if there's like a word I can put into it. And all they really care about is themselves and like Americans. They don't care if a like Iranian woman is in prison and whatsoever, however she's treated, nobody cares. But if there's like one American person like here in Iran, the whole world has to know, and like everybody comes to do something. But like for Iran, like Iranian people, and like especially a woman, like you're supposed to care more, and like, you know, she's not a man, she's a woman. So yeah, they're very careless and selfish.
Well, Malika, let me ask you on a different note, what you went through when your mother was away, and then since she's gotten back, how your life has changed.
Yeah, well, when she left, we were like little kids, so it was like a miserable life, and it was like really heartbreaking, because like we were like really small at the age that like we needed a mother, and like all of our friends had mothers, you know. We felt really lonely, and it was actually really miserable, because like when we went to talk with Sarah, we had the sense of hope that like, you know, maybe our mom will be given back in exchange. But then like it was such a shock that like, you know, we didn't get to see her back. But right now that she's back, it's actually really good, and we're really happy. You know, we try to forget all the bad moments just to like replace it with happiness, and hopefully we'll just be happy.
This whole idea, and I'd like you to talk about the shoe.
Shoe.
But this whole idea about the disillusionment that your daughters obviously have felt towards the U.S. and of course the justice system and how you were treated in particular is something I'd like for you to expand on after you talk about the shoe, because you have said on a number of occasions that the U.S. doesn't stand for human rights as they preach. But first, the shoe.
As I always say, there is no justice in the United States of America. For the shoe, I would tell you, for instance, from the second that they put you in the shoe, they start to give you, for instance, 1,000 times used underwears to the ladies. And consider the fact there are many, many ladies affected by different diseases. So what they do, it's just they're spreading the disease for the ladies, which, for instance, I refused to wear it, and I got what I wanted. But for many, many other ladies that they were put in the shoe, they have to wear whatever it's there. The food is horrible. It's horrible. You prefer not to eat anything. And if you don't have money in U.S. federal prisons, you starve. I mean, somehow you have to steal from the kitchen, or you have to do something, beat somebody or bully somebody to get money, to get something from off the commissary. Then the area was horribly dirty, and I mean the blood all over the walls. A cage like 1 meter by 1.1, and they put two beds, two person in this area, like the photo, the images that they usually use for my interviews, comparing to where I have been confined, is really good conditions, what you see here. After 3 days that I was put out, and I got the interview with Press TV, which I always appreciate that, finally, they were forced to transfer me from that horrible place to a little bit better place. For instance, I was not forced to shower with the black worms under my feet. And
that's terrible.
Yeah, and steaming water of black mold and green mold on top of your head. So, and the fact is, U.S. government, they are talking about humanity. If there are some criminals, they all have sometimes that I can say based on the places that I've been in these prisons, I can say just 10% of the inmates are the one with life sentence or over 25 sentence. U.S. government does not even think about the simple rights of people, that the way they live and their health. Like, people walk in healthy and walk out filled with a lot of disease. Then these people...
Let me jump in quickly because we're running out of time and I can't help but we have to talk about this.
Okay,
it's quite
heavy.
I'll talk about it. I forget, 528 pages, 548 pages, but give us quickly, if you can, a synopsis of this book. Obviously, you have lots of experiences that you've recounted in this book.
Yes. First of all, I would tell you what was the reason that I started to write the book. While I was incarcerated, I wrote thousands of letters to many of politicians. There is no country, no king, no president, no prime minister that I haven't wrote to while I was incarcerated. I never got any response from any of them except the Oman authority, Sultan Qaboos, which I always appreciate. So when I came out of the prison, I fought all my case for 5 years in America, and there was no justice, by no means. And when I came out, I said I'm going to file a case and sue America in International Court of Justice. But before this case happened to me, I used to believe that justice comes to protect human rights. But after what had happened to me, and when I wanted to apply to The Hague, for instance, to sue U.S. government, and I found out, okay, no individual can go and sue a government by itself, and we have to get the governments involved, I just found out, and it was clear to me, that justice is just there to protect the government's interests, and it has nothing to do to protect human rights. So I was like, okay, it's the time, through the justice system of either international or national, any justice system, I cannot get my words out and I cannot get my violated rights back. So I'm going to put this book just to record everything that had happened. It's all about my life because it starts with the war in Iran and Iraq. I was a victim by then too. I lived in the war, and then this U.S. case. And I said, I just put it out because I'm not the only one, as I always say. And there are lots of, I mean, there are millions of other women like me that their story is hidden. And I'm just calling to all these ladies to put it out.
Thank you. Fortunately, we're fresh out of time. The book highly recommended, obviously, by the name of Shahrzad, A True Story. I'm sure lots of recounts of your experience there. But I'd like to thank you for coming to the studios. Shahrzad Mirghali Khan, Melina, and Malika, it was a pleasure seeing you after a long time.
Thank you so much.
And that does it
for,
a look at a special Press TV program, Our Focus, Shahrzad Mirghali Khan. Thanks so much for watching. From Mikhail Tavoy and the entire team, it's goodbye. Thank you.